This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry in New York. Thanks so much for listening. You are all with us around the nation on this day after the marathon bombings, thinking about the good people of Boston. We've got our good friend and colleague, Callie Crossley from Boston Public Radio, and our partner, WGBH, joining us all this hour. Welcome, Callie.
Hi, how are you, John?
Great. Also with us is WGBH reporter Edgar B. Herwick III. Edgar, glad to have you with us.
Happy to be here, John. Thanks.
So for so many, the Boston Marathon bombings brought a terrifying night of vigils and vigilance, now followed by a day after of questions and fears about the future. How are you folks doing up there, Callie?
Stunned and shocked, I think, is the best way to characterize it. Because it's a kind of surrealness, which I think when you've heard from people who've been in the midst of something horrific happening, something you never thought would happen in your community, that's generally how it's described. And it's weird to be feeling that today.
And you were on this story from the very beginning, as were you, Edgar. Can you give us a sense, Edgar, what people are saying about the bombs themselves, a sense of clarity about where the investigation stands? The FBI has come into this now.
Yeah, I mean, there's no hard data at this point. There are no suspects in custody. What it seems to be leaning toward is this idea that it was potentially a domestic terror group or terror act of some sort. The bombs are being described as somewhat improvised. We've heard the term IED thrown around, but there seems to be a sense at this point that that's where investigators are leaning. Though there is no hard data right now and no suspects in custody.
Talking to Edgar B. Herwick III, reporter for WGBH, Boston Public Radio, and some of the details that came out yesterday describing these bombs as designed to go off in a low sort of profile, aimed targeting, Callie, it seems, the limbs of those runners coming right there at the finish line. I mean, that's just very emotional.
Well, it seems that way, though we don't know if that what the way they were placed just meant that they were trying to hide them well, because this area is really pretty cordoned off before the race. And if you would push them down in these barrels, which is what we have heard, we don't know those exact details, then they would necessarily end up affecting people with their lower extremities, which is what has happened. It's caused a great number of amputations and a lot of people with complex lower limb extremity injuries. Fortunately, Boston, as you know, is a world-class medical center, so we have a lot of trauma experts here. But even they said last night that they had never seen quite this volume at one time.
Give us a sense, Callie, of what people in Boston have been telling you, contacting the public radio station there at WGBH, reacting from the quarters of officialdom there in Boston.
What they're saying is, how could this happen? There were children there. This is what happens every year. And asking the question, is it forever changed? Because when we think about the young victim who is now named Martin Richard, 8 years old, that says it all. When you have a child who was killed after hugging his father, who had just finished the race, went back to stand on the sidelines, and then there it happened. And Edgar was very close to that line. So Edgar, you actually felt the rumblings from the street. So you know what this impact was all about.
Absolutely. I was a block away from the first bomb, where it went off and when it went off, and had been just maybe 20 minutes prior, right in that exact area where the bomb went off. And as Callie was expressing, you have to understand, this is such a celebration in Boston. And that spot in particular, there are so many people there. There are families. I was just in that same area talking with a lot of people from Kenya who had come and were celebrating the Kenyan runners. There were cheering. There are people completing their lifelong dream of running the Boston Marathon right in that spot. It's so positive, and it was such a celebration. And then this awful act happens. And as Callie said, I was about a block away from there when it happened, a low boom sound that you could feel. And smell, that smell of sulfur that you might get after a fireworks display. I went sort of running in the direction of it to see if I could find out what was happening. And, 10 to 15 seconds later, a second one.
And I think, John, something to understand, many people have questioned the timing, wondering if these were amateurs and at the time to have set them off, if they were precise murderers, if you will, or meant to injure, would have been right when the elite runners crossed the line, because that the largest number of people are standing there. But actually, as I pause to think about it, I think it was meant to be when it was, because these are the regular people coming across the line. The elite runners had come across already.
And Callie, I would say there's even more people there at the time that the bombs went off, because when the elite runners go, it's very early in the day, and the vast majority of people who go down there are going down there because they have a friend or a loved one who are running the race. And that the bulk of those 25,000 or so racers that run every year are regular people. I mean, only a handful of them are the elite.
There's always a surge in the marathon at that three-hour point where the civilians, for lack of a better word, come in there. And you know, you also have staggered starts at the marathon. So one could have predicted that that would have been a peak moment in terms of crowd size. Edgar?
I think that's exactly right on the money. That's exactly right on the money. And I was down there, before the elite runners had even crossed, and the crowd around the finish line had been swelling steadily up to that point. So I think you're right on the money that you could absolutely have guessed that that is when the most people would be there. Not to mention the fact that just a few minutes prior, the Red Sox game had let out. And as anybody who knows Boston knows, that Red Sox stadium, Fenway Park, is not that far from Copley Square. And so the fact that the Red Sox game had been over for a few minutes, that the, as you said, John, the sort of regular people were crossing the finish line at that time, it was very busy, and you could absolutely have guessed that that was a peak time.
And that's a tradition for some, John. Some people go to the Red Sox game and then walk over to the marathon.
Talking with Edgar B. Herwick III from WGBH, Boston Public Radio, and our good friend Callie Crossley from Boston Public Radio, reacting to the day after the marathon attacks. Callie, you said it a moment ago, are we changed forever thinking about Boston? That's our message and question to the audience. Are we becoming a nation that fears gathering in crowds? The events in Boston may cast a shadow on this summer of 2013. How do we balance our freedom with our sense of security? How are all of you feeling after all of this? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. We've already heard some really emotional reactions from people around the country expressing their solidarity for the people of Boston.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.